The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling, well, one of the most fundamental and frankly kind of painful paradoxes in the business world.
Mm-hmm.
Why do these really successful market-leading companies, you know, the ones doing everything right, suddenly find themselves facing collapse?
It is the ultimate counterintuitive twist, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The common explanation you always hear is, oh, it's bad leadership or maybe arrogance.
Right.
But The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen argues pretty much the opposite. These companies fail precisely because they follow the textbook rules of good management.
I find this just incredibly insightful and maybe, yeah, a little terrifying too. I mean, we're all taught you prioritize your current high-value customers, you chase those high margins.
Standard playbook.
Exactly. And Christensen suggests that doing that is actually the mechanism of your eventual destruction when some new technology pops up.
That's the core tension, the thing we really need to explore today. Our mission here is to take Christensen's meticulously researched framework and kind of break down why this failure pattern is systemic, not just accidental.
Okay.
We want to give you the practical knowledge to maybe spot true disruption and, crucially, understand how to navigate it so you can be, you know, proactive about change, not just reactive.
Okay, let's unpack the source of this this really brilliant theory. Who was the man who basically turned business strategy on its head?
That would be Clayton M. Christensen. Sadly, he passed away in 2020. He was just a towering figure, a professor at Harvard Business School.
Right.
And what made his work so distinctive, I think, was his foundation. He was a Rhodes Scholar, had a Harvard PhD, so he brought incredible academic rigor.
But he wasn't just stuck in the ivory tower, which I think is really key here. He had real-world experience, right? He consulted a BCG. He co-founded a successful advanced materials company himself.
Exactly. He blended that pure academic theory with genuine, you know, practitioner experience.
Hmm.
What's really fascinating, though, is how he developed his predictive theory.
Hmm.
He didn't just rely on general business history. He used the hard disk drive industry as his perfect, like, fast-paced laboratory.
Ah, okay. Because it changed so fast.
Constantly.
Yeah.
It was an industry that went through these rapid, repeated technological shifts, boom, 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 in quick succession. And by tracking those same market leaders failing time and again, he built this robust model that predicted failure based on behavior, not just, you know, bad luck or circumstance.
So the core purpose of the book, then, is really to give leaders a new lens, a new way to view innovation, one that moves past just superficial blame, like saying they were arrogant.
Yeah, it suggests that success itself actually contains the seeds of failure. And this whole structural trap hinges on one critical distinction. Christensen says for leaders to survive, they have to differentiate between two types of innovation.
Okay.
The first type, which everyone loves, is sustaining innovation.
Right. These are the obvious improvements we see all the time. Faster performance, better quality, maybe higher capacity.
Mm-hmm.
If you're that hard drive company back then, you make your big 14-inch drive even faster, hold more data, your best customers absolutely love it, and your margins probably improve too. Companies are excellent at this.
They really are.
Yeah.
But then you have the other kind, disruptive innovation. And these are the technologies that honestly initially look terrible.
Terrible? How so?
Well, they're inferior when you measure them by the standards your mainstream customers value. They might be slower, maybe cheaper, hold less data initially. They offer a completely different value proposition, maybe simplicity or lower cost or convenience. And they tend to appeal only to new emerging markets or maybe the low-end fringe that the big guys ignore.
So, okay, here's the dilemma then. If I'm the successful market leader, my processes, my finances, everything incentivizes me to invest all my resources into those high-margin, sustaining innovations, the ones that please my current best customer.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But that rational choice systematically forces me to neglect or even actively reject the tiny, low-margin, uncertain, disruptive opportunities.
It's a resource allocation trap, and it's designed by success itself.
Wow. Okay, let's look at how that trap actually manifests. Starting with that iconic example you mentioned, the disk drive industry, Christensen detailed how the market leaders, again and again, failed to transition to the next smaller format.
Yeah, they'd master, say, the 8-inch drive, but then completely miss the boat on the 5.25-inch and then miss the next one and so on.
And why? What was the core reason?
It's all about the value network. That's the term he uses. It's the ecosystem of your established large customers. They dictate what your company deems valuable.
Right.
So when those smaller drives first emerged, the leaders' mainframe customers, their big money clients, had absolutely no use for them. They demanded continued improvements on the large, high-capacity drives.
So the managers, acting rationally, listened to their most profitable customers. Makes sense. And they rejected the new, kind of crummy-looking technology.
Exactly. They focused on refining the established product, which let these small, nimble newcomers just swoop in and seize the emerging markets, like mini-computers and then early PCs.
And by the time those smaller drives got good enough to become serious threats to the main business,
it was too late. The incumbent leaders had lost the necessary know-how, the customer base, the whole market context.
And what's really striking is how universal this pattern is. You're saying it's not just tech.
Not at all. Think about heavy industry manufacturing. We saw the exact same progression when the big integrated steel giants, you know, U.S. Steel, Bethlehem Steel, ceded the low-end rebar market to these tiny mini-mills like Nucor.
Rebar? Like the steel rods and concrete?
Yeah, basic stuff. The margins were just too low for the giants to even care about. It was a rounding error for them.
So it sounds like it's a psychological and motivational problem as much as a technological one.
Oh, absolutely. Christensen calls it asymmetric motivation. To the integrated giant, that low-margin rebar market was trivial. It was, frankly, a headache they were happy to get rid of. But to the mini-mill entrant, winning that small, seemingly insignificant market was everything. It was survival.
So they fight harder for it.
They fight harder, they improve relentlessly, and eventually they move up market, threatening the giant's core, high-margin business, just like the smaller disk drives eventually moved up to threaten the mainframe market.
You even see this with construction equipment, right?
In the
earth-moving industry.
Yeah. The established giants failed to transition from the old cable-operated excavation systems to hydraulics.
Why? Hydraulics seem better now.
Initially, they offered less lift, less speed. They were technically inferior on the metrics the big contractors valued.
Yeah.
But they were cheaper and way more flexible for smaller contractors.
Ah, so that provided the foothold, the entry point for disruption.
Exactly. That pattern is almost deterministic. But okay, why can't these large firms just buy the disruptive technology or assign their best engineers to it? That brings us back to their internal structure, what Christensen calls the RPV framework.
RPV? Resources, processes, and values. Okay. We know incumbents usually have the resources, right? They've got the money, the talent. So where does the capability problem really lie?
It lies mostly in the processes and the values. Think about it. A large company's processes, the repeatable ways work gets done, from budgeting and planning to manufacturing and sales, they're all optimized for efficiency and predictability in the sustaining business.
Okay, makes sense. Streamlined for what they currently do well.
And their values. They prioritize large markets, predictable growth, and high profitability metrics, things shareholders demand.
So when a small, maybe low margin, highly uncertain, disruptive project gets proposed internally?
The organization's DNA, those highly optimized processes and those demanding values, acts as a serious disability. The whole system is basically designed to reject anything that doesn't look like it will contribute significantly to this quarter's high margin bottom line.
It can't process it. It filters it out.
Precisely. You can't, you know, force a two-year-old into a marathoner's running shoes and expect them to win. The capabilities just aren't aligned.
So what's the solution then? What's the key prescription?
It's organizational separation. He argues very strongly, you must create independent, autonomous organizations. These could be spin-offs or maybe deeply separate internal business units.
And the point of separating them is?
These new, smaller entities have to have a cost structure and a size that's actually matched to the initially small, uncertain emerging market. This frees them from the parent company's often crushing demand that they deliver, say, $50 million in profit right out of the gate.
So they have room to breathe, room to learn.
Exactly. They're free to learn, fail small, iterate, and actually grow with the disruptive market rather than being judged by the standards of the mature market.
That seems like the strategic heart of the book. Okay, let's try and distill these core insights into maybe three key themes for listeners.
That's good.
Theme one for me is the most crucial, especially for managers. The paradox of good management. We really have to challenge this default idea that failure automatically means incompetence or bad leadership. Failure often results from perfectly rational, data-driven decisions that prioritize the demands of your existing profitable customers. It's a kind of blindness that stems directly from excellence in your current game.
Yeah, that's a tough one to swallow, but vital. Theme two, I'd say, is the overshoot trajectory. This is critical for actually predicting disruption not just reacting to it.
Okay, what's the overshoot idea?
It's that technology often improves much faster than customer needs actually evolve. So your established product will eventually offer more performance, more features, than the mainstream market truly requires or can even utilize.
Right. Like, how much storage do we really need on our phones versus what they pack in now?
Exactly. Or processor speed in laptops for most users. When you overshoot the customer's actual needs, you create this vacuum at the low end. Customers become willing to trade that unnecessary, maybe expensive, extra performance for simplicity or convenience or just a lower price.
And that's the moment the simpler, cheaper disruptor can find its foothold. The good enough solution starts to win.
Precisely. And theme 3 builds on that. Market discovery is essential. For these truly disruptive innovations, traditional market analysis, market research, it's basically useless.
Why useless?
Because the market literally does not exist yet. You can't survey people effectively about something they haven't even conceived of needing or wanting. The data isn't there.
Which means managers can't be planners in the traditional sense. They have to be more like humble learners.
Exactly. They need to adopt what Christensen called a discovery-driven approach. Launch quickly, maybe imperfectly. Iterate based on how real users unexpectedly use the product. Maintain flexibility above all else. Forget the 5-year plan.
Learn by doing, basically.
Learn by doing, precisely.
Yeah.
Christensen was brilliant at condensing these complex ideas into incredibly powerful, memorable statements. We should probably share a few.
Good idea.
Okay, quote number 1, and this really captures the core dilemma. Good managers do what makes sense, and what makes sense is primarily determined by their customers and by their investors.
That just immediately reframes the manager's role, doesn't it? They aren't necessarily villains, they're just following the incentives the system gives them. It's rational behavior leading to failure.
Right. And quote 2 addresses the nature of the threat itself. Disruptive technologies bring to a market a very different value proposition than had been available previously.
And this is why incumbents miss them. They evaluate the new thing, like that simple, low-capacity disk drive, against the old criteria high capacity for mainframes. They're measuring the new innovation by the metrics of the system it's actually about to disrupt or even kill.
Exactly. They're using the wrong yardstick. And finally, the strategic mandate that follows from that, quote 3, markets that do not exist cannot be analyzed.
Simple, but profound. Stop spending millions on feasibility studies and 5-year forecasts for something that really just requires maybe $50,000 worth of quick, real-world experimentation.
It's a clear mandate for action over bureaucracy, for learning over planning, when dealing with the truly new.
Okay, so this is a fascinating theory, but how can people listening apply this thinking right now, whether they're running a massive firm or maybe just launching a startup?
Well, for strategy, inside an existing company, the absolute first step has to be categorizing every single innovation opportunity you look at. Ask, is this sustaining or is it potentially disruptive?
And if it is disruptive,
you have to treat it completely differently.
Mm.
Protect it fiercely from the metrics, the processes, the values of the core business. Give it that separate incubator environment, maybe a different building, different team, where failure is cheap and learning is the main goal, not immediate profit.
Right. And what about for entrepreneurs, people starting something new?
This framework actually provides a really clear playbook. It says, don't attack the market leader head on trying to steal their most profitable customers. That's usually a losing game. They have all the advantages there.
So what should they do?
Instead, target non-consumption. Look for people who currently cannot afford or can't easily access or find the existing product too complicated to use. Solve their problem.
Like Netflix, maybe? They didn't initially compete directly with movie theaters for opening night crowds.
Exactly. They targeted the inconvenience of the blockbuster model, the late fees, the trip to the store. They solved the problem for people who weren't necessarily heavy consumers of the old model, making movie watching easier and cheaper at home. They found non-consumption, or under-consumption.
Okay. And for leaders within any existing organization, large or small?
You need to take a really hard, honest look at your internal organizational values and processes. Ask yourself, you know, ruthlessly, if a project came along that had to target an initial market of only, say, $5 million, and it could only promise maybe 10% margins for the first 5 years while it learned and grew, would our current structure, our current incentive system, automatically reject it out of hand?
And if the honest answer is yes,
then structural change is necessary if you genuinely want to pursue future growth through disruption. You can't just will it to happen within the old system. You might need that spin-off or that truly autonomous unit.
Thinking back on all this, what surprised me most, I think, is just how predictable the whole pattern seems once Christensen lays it out. He took what often felt like random market failure, you know, lightning striking, and showed it follows this precise, almost deterministic logic, a logic rooted in success itself.
Yeah, it feels almost inevitable unless you intentionally, consciously build structures and mindsets to fight against your own well-honed, successful management habits.
Like a painful truth, maybe, but an absolutely necessary one for any organization that wants real longevity. The enemy is often your own past excellence.
Well put, it really is.
So here's a provocative question for you, the listener, to maybe mull over after this. Look at your own product or service right now, or the one your company offers. Is its performance, its feature set, currently overshooting what your average customer truly requires or uses?
Good question.
And if it is, where is the simpler, cheaper, good enough technology or approach that is quietly, maybe invisibly right now, finding a foothold in the low end or the overlooked fringe of your market? Just being aware of that possibility, asking that question. That's the critical first step to survival, according to Christensen.
Excellent point to end on, that awareness is key.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.